Okay, the Mitzvah Shir returns. So tonight, we're starting our series on the Aseret HaDibros, and we're actually starting from the end of the Aseret HaDibros. Not for a specific reason to start at the end as opposed to the beginning. They're all a lot. The reality of preparing for this is that every one could have been multiple Shirim. We could have taken an entire year, plus to go through them and still not be done with them. So we're sort of racing through it a little bit in 10 weeks. But, okay, so we started with the last one. And the truth is, the only reason I started with the last one as opposed to the first one, the idea of spending time and talking about Emunah and the idea of Anochi Hashem and faith and all that, that's a very heavy, deep conversation. And I think we'll get there. But let's look at some of the other things first, and maybe that'll help us inform that last conversation when we get there. Sometime in February, I think, hopefully. Okay, so we're starting with the 10th one. And what we're going to do tonight is, generally speaking, sort of an overview of the 10th one. And if we have time on the back, there's one practical halakhic question that came up to Rav Asher Weiss that he has printed in his sefer. That's on the back of page, that's on page number 4, which is a strange question. And how it relates to Lo Tachmod, we'll have to see when we begin. So let's look first at source number one. Again, we're dealing with the 10th of the 10 commandments. Also commercial. This Shabbat we have the great pleasure of hosting Rabbi J.J. Schachter here in Cheshmonaim. I highly recommend every one of his lectures over Shabbat. All in English. The first two at Glenwood, the third one here at Ramon in the afternoon. But definitely come to all of them. And on Sunday night, Rabbi Ari Leibowitz, who is an up-and-coming, I like if I said that on tape, up-and-coming, incredible Talmud Chacham, who's also going to be here, and he'll give a shir on Sunday night, I think in Glenwood, that is still yet confirmed in terms of the location, on a great topic relating to kidney donation. The title is One for You and One for You and None for You. Can I choose who is the beneficiary of my chesed? Really interesting topic, and for him deeply, also in English, and for him deeply personal, as he is a kidney. I didn't?
No, I don't know.
Oh, I think he did. I tried. I'm putting it out every day this week, I think I have. They haven't yet cut me off on the remote, so maybe at some point they will.
That's okay.
Don't worry, then I'll just do it.
Right, to tag someone else. Okay, so let's begin. So the first thing we're going to do is look at the first two sources. The first source, source number one, is from the first time the Luchot are listed, Dibrot are listed in the Torah. And source number two is the second time that they're listed in the Torah. And what I want you to do is just to look at the text and pose any questions that you might have that jump out at you with respect to the text there. We will not answer all of them, I promise. But it's a worthy exercise in learning, in understanding how Mefarshim work, how Midrashim work, and Gemara works, is to sort of look at them. It's happening twice, so okay, that's already a question, fine. Then,
both of the answers are Dibrot?
These are two, yes. The first one is Shmot, in the Parshas Yisro. The second one is Moshe telling it over again in Sefer Devarim.
So he mixed up so,
question.
He
switched which order?
Well, right in the very beginning. Lo tachmod beit
re'echa. Okay, and the second one?
Lo tachmod eish.
Good, very good, very good. First question, right? Why the change in the sequence of the commandment from beit re'echa first to eishet re'echa second? We'll actually get a chance, hopefully, to answer that one tonight. What else? Oh, good. So, right. So, in the first one, it says Lotachmod. Also, it says Lotachmod twice, but okay, we'll leave that out for a second. But yes, in the first one, it says Lotachmod. And in the second one, when it does the repetition of the statement, it doesn't say Lotachmod a second time, it says Lotitave. What does that word mean? Is that different? Right? Is it some, you know, you can ask a ton of questions now that you have a different term. What does that mean? Is it the same? If it's the same, why not say the same thing? Is it different? If it's different, then what exactly is it different, and how is it different, and how does it change anything? And what does it accomplish for us practically speaking? Good. Anything else?
Also in the second one, it says Sadehu.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, that's right. The second one does have the term Sadehu, and the first one does not have that. Also a very good question. We may get to answer that one too tonight. Good.
What's Vilo?
And lo tachmod is a mental exercise.
Okay.
As versus a doing exercise.
Right. So that's a second level question, right? Secondary level question, deeper level, which is what exactly is this thing? And as you said, tachmod, if we know basic Hebrew, that concept of chemda is not an active mode, it's a mental mode or an emotional mode or a psychological mode. And what exactly does that mean that there's a prohibition there, right? Am I expanding your question?
There's no mindset.
There's no practical active, right? There's no activity that seems to be involved in this as opposed to what comes right before it, right? You have a lo tignov or you have a lo ta'aneh b'reicha id shakir, right? Those are active modes, doings. Here you're not, them not appear to be doing anything. So, yes, you've asked a lot of the right questions. Let's see if we can start to practically answer some of them. Those are all the right questions. So, here we go. We'll start right away. Source number 3 with the Rambam. And here we're going to get into sort of trying to establish a frame for the prohibition. And the Rambam says in Sefer HaMitzvot, in fact, that we have two different prohibitions here. Prohibition number 1, this is on line number 6. This is in Sefer Mitzvot, Lo Ta'aseh, number Resh Samech Hei, 265. So he says as follows, line number 6. Ha'az harasha he's shehu's harnu, mila ha'asik machshevotenu betach ulot. We are commanded warned about having our minds get involved. How is it that we're going to take the possessions of a brother of ours? Okay? So this is the mental exercise of thinking about how am I going to get his stuff? You should not covet your brother's home. Meaning, right, you're making an effort mentally, you're coming up with some sort of a scheme or a plan to then go and take his stuff. Okay?
No.
Why?
That's what it said.
Isha is referred to as Bayit also.
Yes, but I'm not even focusing on Isha. I'm just simply saying what the Rambam's words are. The Rambam's words are that lo tachmod means that you are making a mental plan about how to go and get someone else's stuff. You see his house, you see his fields, you see his animals, you see his spouse, you see his wealth, and now in your brain, it's not just simple jealousy, it's beyond that. You are in an active mode
of plans,
of planning to go and take his stuff. That's prohibition number 1. Now, have you done anything? It does not appear that you've actually done anything. Will you have to do something? We'll see in just a moment whether you actually have to go and do something. So that's issur number 1, prohibition number 1. The Rambam then says in Reish Samech Vav, the next one on line 8, Ha'az harashu husharnu militlot machshivotenu bikach, to sort of hang our minds or our mindset or our thinking, sheyim tzachein be'inyein ruchush zulatenu v'nisgebo So again, it's more about the machshava, the thought process involved, with respect to, you know, dreaming about getting control of someone else's stuff. Don't desire your brother's home. He says these are not one thing. These are two different things. Going to line 10, Ela halav harishon, v'hu lo tachmod, mazhir milirchosh mashakana zulatenu. It's a warning, a prohibition against going and taking that which belongs to your brother. V'alav hasheni, mazhir, the second one, at the end of line 10, afilu al hata'ava v'hachinun, bilvad. Simply on the desire itself. It's two different things. One is simply about the thoughts, and the other is more than the thoughts, is putting the thoughts in action such that you then go and do something to take his stuff. Meaning that if I simply think about it, then I've done one thing wrong. If I think about it, come up with a plan, put the plan in place, and then go actually take his stuff, I've done two things wrong.
But what would that be? What would the second one be? Put this covered already in Do Not Steal.
So that's a good question, right? So great question, and I think you'll see when we get to the Rambam's idea about explaining why this mitzvah exists, or the tam hamitzvah, the essence as to the why, we'll get into exactly that idea, which at the same time we'll explain it, but we'll also seemingly diminish the place of it in the Aseret HaDibrot. Right, because we'll get to. I promise we'll get to. Excuse me, it's on the top of page two.
I have a question.
Yeah, go.
So in modern times, would that be also? Would it be usher for a company to say that they want to buy another company?
Oh, great question. So right. So what do you do about all business practice? Right. Very good question. Right. You look at another business. You see they're really successful. They may be a competitor even, and you come up with a plan. It does not sound like you do anything duplicitous here or dangerous in doing this, right? You want it. So you go and you take it, or you go and figure out how to get it, right? So that's a really good question. We'll also see that in just a moment as well. Great question. Even when Rav Asher Weiss discusses it in his tshuva, he really gets into a little bit of that. And there's a second tshuva, which I couldn't find, but I heard someone talk about, where he basically asks that question. It would sound like from a lot of the different explanations that all business then is prohibited. Because even just buying and selling something is, oh, you're selling something, or I want to buy that. I know people. So I grew up in Brooklyn. So in Flatbush, it's not uncommon for someone literally to just walk up to someone else's house and offer them money to buy their house. That happens for large sums of money. That I know families that have literally moved out over a weekend because they were offered a lot of money. So that would be. The claiming, the chenda, right? Some form of chenda. I see your house. I want your house. Here's the money for your house. Move, right? And they do, right? So, yeah, I know. It sounds a little crazy, but Brooklyn has its own stuff. Okay. What?
It happens.
It does happen. It's not.
Send it to me.
It's. Yes, so, right, so anything that would seemingly be some sort of a scheme or approach towards someone else's property, whatever that is, would be really problematic, it seems, from the way the Rambam is written here. Yeah, let's look at the Rambam Halacha Lamasa in source number 4, where he gets into the Halacha itself in terms of Lamasa. Well, that was his explanation of the mitzvah. Let's see it practically. So source number 4, line number 14, so he says, as Halacha Ted, this is in Hilchot Gezeilah Ve'Aveda, Kol hachomed avdo o amato o beito v'chilav shel chaviro. Anyone who desires any of those items that belong to somebody else. Now he gets interesting. V'hichbid alav biraim v'hiftzir bo ad shelikachom imenu. So basically, he poses pressure to the person and forces the person until he's able to take it from them. Even if he pays him a lot of money for it, so the person is not getting stolen from him, he's getting compensated for the item. Hareza over below tasa. That's the violation of the lo tasa. Just the thought is not enough. You have to move beyond the thought into an action, right? Shenemar lo tachmo. That is how you violate lo tachmo. Let's finish out the Rambam here. You did not violate the prohibition until you take the object. So even if I say to you, I want to buy your house, and it's annoying, it's just annoying. It's not a violation of lotach mode until you go and force that person somehow. How you apply that pressure, how that happens, is a separate question. But that's the Rambam. Kinyan Shenemar, lotach mode kesef
azav. Convince.
What's that?
Force. Or convince.
I think convince is a nicer way of saying what he's trying to accomplish here. The way he says it here.
Wants to accomplish getting a house.
Pressure.
Question is, he offers him more money, so the other man wants to sell the house.
Right. Right. He pushes him into a place where he has to sell, right? By virtue of offering.
No, you don't come in with a gun.
I'm saying he's coming at such a price that is $500,000 or more. Right, then the going asking price, it would seem, would be this, right? You how could you say no? You don't want to sell your house. You love your house. It's a beautiful house, whatever it is. But this person... This person is offering you so much money for your property, right? It's hiftzir. The word lahaftzir is to convince, right? It means to convince. So you're being convinced in a not-so-subtle manner to do it. And he says the last four words, chimud sheyeshbo maaseh, right? And it is a covetousness, how do you say that word? Covetousness? Aren't you the ones in English? Covetousness, right? That has an action attached to it.
Convention.
Right? Just coveting is not good, but it's not a violation of a prohibition, at least this prohibition. Okay, that's one. The second one, however, kol hamitave beito, Michael, we're on line number 18. Kol hamitave beito o ishto, v'chilav shel chaviru v'chol kayitze ben, person who desires any of those things, kevan shechashav bilibo, once you've thought about it, hey ach yikne davar zeh, v'nifte libo badavar, he's sort of like overwhelmed by this idea, avar b'lo tasa shenemar lo titave. So the second one is simply the thought process. Desire is only in the heart. Right? Desire may play itself out in action. Right? At that point, once you've acted upon it, you've done both. Right? You've done the lo titaveh part, the desire part, which is a problem. And then you've done the lo tachmod part, which is actively in mode doing something to get the person to be convinced inspired, for a nicer term, right? To give you their stuff, whatever that is. Now, how that happens with respect to somebody's spouse is, I'm not sure how that works exactly, but with respect to property, a home or a car or something else, a business even, right? Maybe there's a room to sort of understand how that works. But within the Rambam, right, it's two prohibitions. So with respect to the concept of understanding the frame here, the Rambam has two prohibitions, right, that are involved here. One is active, requires an action to violate. The other one is simply just the desirous thoughts involved. Now, how do we punish someone for just thinking something, right? That's a really good question. And we'll get to the Ibn Ezra, because in his parish he basically deals with that question, is how do you punish someone for thoughts?
For not controlling their thoughts?
Right, right.
Desire it, don't touch it. You know,
right.
That's the whole idea of kashrus and
yes, right. It's exactly what the Ibn Ezra says, and we'll get to him. He's in, I think, source number 9 or 10. We'll get there. But that's the scheme as set up by the Rambam. Source number 5 is the Yireim. So the Yireim is also a Rishon, and in his understanding of it, he says no. It's one prohibition. It's not two. You can't say that it's two here. Now, how he deals with the language and the change in the language is a whole thing. But he basically says, if you look at line 22, at the end of line 22. If you think about something and you don't do anything, at the end of line 22, you didn't do it. That's not the violation. The violation is you have to do something. So fine. So once you do something, right, he'll agree that it requires some maaseh to do it, but thought alone is thoughts, right? Machshava is not maaseh here. Machshava is nothing. Okay, you have desirous thoughts of somebody else's property, whatever that is. You're envious. You have some sort of level of chemda for something. Fine, but it's not the isra. And he says at the end, line 26, v'alav ne'mar lo tachmod uktiv lo titaveh perush echad le'elu beis lavin. It is one perush, one explanation for both those two things together. V'shana hakasuv v'alav. So then, why does it say it twice? Lavor la bebeis lavin, to sort of emphasize the idea. This happens in other places in the Torah also, where the Torah will repeat the prohibition to emphasize the severity and the serious nature of it. Thoughts are serious still, even if you don't act on them. Thoughts are still serious. Okay, but
it's also the fact that you're over at 2 levin. It's not just an emphasis, but right?
Yes.
Lavor la bebeis lavin.
Yeah, you would have two. Yeah, and once you did it, you would have two. You would have violated two levin. Now, why would you need two? Okay, that's a good question. That would be an interesting conversation about mitzvot lo taseh bigadol at large.
And if you did nothing?
You just had bad thoughts. You had the wrong... You shouldn't think that way. Shame, shame. But no violation. No violation. But again, that's an approach. Machshava is not enough. You need a mas. Okay, so... There are other ways to explain it. We won't go into them now. Okay, source number 6 is the Ibn Ezra relating to this. This is the beginning of our look at the Ibn Ezra in terms of the sort of the scope of it. And he says right at the beginning, line 29, this is in Sefer Shmot on the first one, Gam tachmod v'tit aveh mi beten echad yatsu. They came out of the same womb. The Hashem Amar, God said, B'Sefer Shmot lo tachmod beit re'echa. Why does he say both then? Like, what's going on? So this will answer some of the questions. It's an interesting answer. Ki anshe haseichel, smart people, yiknu bayit. First they're going to buy a house. V'achar kein isha. Then they're going to find a wife. V'achar kein eved v'ama v'shor v'chamor lachosh adir. Then they'll actually, you know, build a sort of a possession base of property. Animals, livestock, servants, staff, whatever that is. And that's why they're ordered in that way. So if you look back at the first one, it says, Lo tachmod beit re'echa. The first one is listed right in Shmot on line number 1. Line number 2 is, first it's a house, and then it's the wife, and then it's all the possessions. So what about the second one? Moshe says at the end of line 30, Moshe sidram, Moshe retells it in Sefer Devarim, the second time the Luchot, the Aseret HaDibrot had talked about, Al derech acheret, he has a different path. Ki habachurim, the men, the young men, chomdim isha tchila, they first are desirous of a wife. V'achar kach bayit, v'chulei v'chulei v'chulei. So you know it's a different generation, right? The generation that's standing on the cusp of Eretz Yisrael is not the same generation that left Mitzrayim. They're a younger group of people, and they are thinking differently, right? It's a new generation. So Moshe seemingly is attuned to the manner in which they think, and so Moshe flips the order and puts that in place. First it's Isha, and then it's Bayit, and then it's property. I don't know if that helps, but it's an answer to the conversation, to that question that you raised before. It's not a great answer, I think, but it's an interesting answer. Okay, but don't leave yet, because the Ibn Ezra is really, really good, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Okay, so again, what you have now is simply just an understanding from Rishonim about how they viewed these Isurim with respect to, if I violated, how did I violate, and if they then, how many did I violate, right? So that's one. So either have the approach of the Rambam, which is 2, or the Urayim and a lot of others that say it's 1. But okay, you get the idea about what we're talking about. Let's move then into beginning on the bottom of page 1, going to page 2, the Tam HaIsur, the sort of the reasoning behind the music as to why this is Asur. Going up onto page 2, we'll start with the Rambam. So this is actually the Rambam in continuation, the next halacha, in this halacha Yud Aleph there, going up to line 1. And so he explains what's going on here? And he says as follows. Hata'ava, desire, mevia lidei chimud, brings to being covetous. Vahachimud, being covetous, mevia lidei gezel, that leads a person to steal. Okay? Sheim lo ratzu habalim limkor, if a person doesn't want to sell something, Af al pi shehir b'lehem b'damim, even if the person gave them a lot of money, v'hiftzir b'ra'im yavo lidei gezel, and then he sort of convinces him, through all kinds of manners and words and ideas, he's ultimately going to seal it. Shneimar, as it says in the pasuk, v'chamdu batim v'gazlu, v'im amdu habalim b'fanav, and if a person then stands before this person to stop him from doing it, or he's trying to stop him from stealing it, the end of line 2, he's going to end up committing murder.
Can I go back for a second? What's the difference between coveting and desiring?
It's, I don't think anything.
You said one leads to the other, but why would one lead to the other? The
same thing? So I think, I would say I'll retract that and say that it's a higher level.
Chim is a higher level.
Chim is a higher level.
Progression, like first is a tithe, then there's a.
Yeah, I think it's like an overwhelming. It's more than just like if you can almost like can't even control it. Like it's an urge that has moved beyond on some level beyond rational, to a point where you are scheming to do this. That's what the Rambam is saying. It's like, at first, it's like, you see the guy's property, and you're like, oh, you know, that's nice. And then it doesn't go away, right? And it sort of builds, and it grows, and it becomes worse and worse and worse, until now, it sort of, it overwhelms your thinking, and all you can think about is, how are you going to get this? In the same way that, like, the idea of revenge sort of overtakes a person so that they can't control it anymore. I think that's the idea here. If you look at what he says at the end, and we'll talk about that in just a moment.
You put advertising out of business.
No, because I don't think that advertising something is to the point of pain, right?
The advertising gets you to think of perhaps something you didn't, and then it gradually goes higher, then how can you live without it?
Okay. But so there are forms of advertising which are problematic both legally and halakhically, I would say. I don't think this is much more direct and in your face as opposed to on a billboard somewhere on the road, you know, where it's more like, sir, you're going to sell me your house, I'm going to pay you for it, but you don't really have a choice in the matter. Hint, hint, time to go. My father tells a story that years ago he owned a property in downtown Brooklyn. They did not realize that they bought in the wrong part of Brooklyn. And they got visited in the office one day, and it wasn't so much as an offer as it was a statement that you're going to sell that property. And so they did. They sold that property. It wasn't even a question that they were going to sell the property because it was in their best interest. To no longer be on that block, and so they sold. That's a much higher level of threat, but in some level, like a, you know, you're pushing it that far. What's interesting about the Rambam is that the Rambam's statement about lo tachmod as a prohibition is that it's almost like it's the fence, right? Don't violate that one, because if you violate that one, then you're just going to go up the chain in the Aseret HaDibro to Gezela and Geneva and murder, right? So this is like holding it back. If you cross this line, all bets are off, which is interesting as an explanation as to why that's there. And that may be true, you know, from a psychological standpoint, that it starts with desire and it moves to urges and it gets beyond that. But on another level, it diminishes the place of this idea. It's only there as a fence to the other ones. It doesn't have its own sort of...
Why is it at 10 and not 10?
Oh, great question. So yeah, that's a legitimate question on the roundup, right? Why is it last, right? But at first, because it'll put them in order, sequence of don't do this one, don't do that one, which happens in other places in the Torah where you see the snowball effect in the listing of mitzvos in other locations where it says if you start with this, it leads to this, it leads to this, it leads to the next one. Here, flip it around, right? Put this one first in the list because, you know, if you don't do this one, then you're going to have to worry about the other ones, right? The only reason people are donating things is because they want them, right? Or they, sometimes they need them, but mostly because they want them. But that's the Rambam. And then he brings this example of Achav and Navot from Melachim Aleph, which is a very interesting story. We can't do all of it inside, but that story is basically the following. Navot had a field, a really nice field. It was next door to the castle of Achav. Achav is the king. He is not a particularly good guy. His wife is worse. Izebel, I gave a shiur years ago on the worst, it's called the worst people in the Bible. And Izebel is up there. She is not particularly good. And in this story, Achav goes to Navot. You can read it inside if you want. He goes to Navot and he says, I want your field. And Navot says, no way. From generations, this is my family's property, it's legacy, it's tribal, no way, I'm not giving it to you. And Achav leaves and he's sad. He goes home and he's sad and he's upset and he fasts and he can't handle this idea that this guy said no to him. Someone said no to him. He's just devastated by it. And his wife hatches a plan, right, where basically she frames Navot into a situation where he blasphemed God, right, and the king, which is a capital offense. She brings witnesses to that effect. Navot is killed, and suddenly Achav has a field. Ta-da! Congratulations, right? So in that story, Achav, it'd have to be hard to believe that Achav doesn't know what's going on in that story, and that this happens without his sort of knowledge as the king, right? And he's sort of tacitly okay with it. And then when the field becomes his, he doesn't ask any questions like, oh, what happened to Navot, right? He just goes and he takes the field and it becomes his, right? That's not good. Now, that's a long process, right? But ultimately, it leads to lying, theft, and murder, right? Which is what the Rambam is saying starts with Achav's coveting Navot's field. And so that is his example of progression towards this violation, which ends with the last words on line 21, well, that I brought, Haratzachta v'gam yirashta, you committed murder and now you're inheriting, right? Did Achav directly kill the guy? No. Is he implicated and partially responsible? Yes. And so Eliyahu, in this case, has no problem saying that to him directly. And so that's the Rambam sort of idea, that number 10, the 10th commandment, is a fence guarding against other violations. So it's interesting then that there's a fence built in to the 10 commandment system. That idea that fences is a legitimate thing and it's built right into the system at the beginning. Okay, so that's one idea in terms of understanding sort of the meaning behind it. Okay, idea number two comes from Kasuto in source number 9 in his Perush on Chumash, and he says as follows. He says, Chidush niskav nimtza bedibor lotach, what a very beautiful idea is embedded in the prohibition of lotach mode. Ha'adam mechuyav chiyuv yisodi. A person is obligated, something very fundamental, lihimana, to refrain, to hold back, lo rak milin of et eshet re'ehu umidignov masha shayach re'ehu, not only to not just take someone else's wife or take someone else's stuff, elagami lihishtokek le'eshet re'ehu ulurchush re'ehu, even to crave it, right? Craving is more than just like, well, I think I want a burger for dinner. Craving a burger is like, I gotta have a burger, right? I gotta go out 11 o'clock at night, I gotta go have it, right? So even that, he says, is problematic and prohibited. Af betchuka zohu over avera chamura, right? Just the desire itself, the wanting of it at all, is a very serious violation. Why? Because it's neged ha'ikronot shebahatzara elokit. God doesn't want you to do that. God does not want you to be desirous and covetous of other people's stuff. Kanir'eh, ha'kavanahi lo rak shehatshuka tucha lavi l'deimaseh. It's not just that that desire might lead you to cause and might do something. Umin ha'ra'ui la'asur otam yishum siyag, and that it would be like the Rambam said, as a fence, that would be one thing. Elagam shehatshuka atzmahi kvar hasagadvul. Just the desire itself is crossing the fence.
Jealousy is
in and of itself is yes.
Nothing
to do with an action, just simply the desire itself, and God builds it into the Aseret HaDibrot. Because you might think, oh, I have to do stuff wrong to be in violation of fundamental principles. Mm-hmm. And Kasuta is saying, no, I don't have to do anything. I just have to think the wrong things. To have a set of thinking that is off, that is effectively against what God wants. And b'machshava im b'lo b'masa, even if you don't do anything, fundamental to it is this idea that embedded in here is don't crave other people's stuff. That's a problem. Now, why is that a problem? We'll have to maybe go a little bit deeper as to why that's a problem. But that is a problem. I'm going to skip Philo on the bottom, but I recommend you reading it or learning it on your own. Because basically he goes much deeper and he says that it's not only that it's a personal thing, it's a communal thing, it's a national thing. And desiring other people's stuff is really, really problematic. Just look at the last four words going up onto the top of page 3. He says, in the end of line 3, Hareze matzil heres al hamin ha'enoshi. It's like a poison. It's like a poison on the entirety of humanity. Desiring other people's property, we're thinking about other people's material wealth and items, he says, is fundamentally destructive to the human condition.
In my opinion, I've given this a lot of thought the last few weeks, the underlying fundamental clash between the right and the left right now, I think, is about this. It's about wanting what others have versus being satisfied with it.
I try to keep the politics out of the shiur, but...
I'm not criticizing it. You're noticing it. Wanting free stuff.
You're not judging it.
I'm just noticing it.
Yeah, I hear that. noticing it is good. That's a good... I have that... I think I mentioned this once in the shiur. I used to have this app on meditation. So I spent some time trying to meditate. And a lot of the time, it would talk about noticing things without judging them. Right? Notice something, don't judge it. Right? Just notice that it's there. Be aware of it. Let it sit there. Then maybe some point later, if you want to, you know, come back and think about it. But yes, you may be right. I want what they have. They have what I don't have. Why is that? That's not fair. And based on those 5-6 words, right? It's destructive to the human condition.
That's Facebook or Instagram or any of this.
So again, that's a judgment on all the social, on social media and all these other things. Yes, people putting it up a certain way partially is for other people to be envious, desirous, covetous, right, of it too, also causing it to just go, right, to sort of erode or corrupt those fundamentals further. There's no question about it. There's no question about it. Right, so he said, it's not simply personal, right? If it's just personal, so it's my thing or whatever, right? Philo, in his explanation, goes, it's not just personal. It is personal, and that's bad. But it goes communal, because once you have a group of people in a community that, it is also just separately, it is also the stuff of revolution, right? It does, in some cases in history, where you have the haves and the have-nots, right, mm-hmm. will very much be at root some of the revolutions that have occurred in history.
Sure.
Again,
sure.
I'm just, again, noticing, not judging.
Absolutely.
Okay. But yes, I think your point is right. All this other stuff is 100% true. I mean, it's a driver of all these different things. And separating from it and disengaging from it is really difficult, because it's not crazy to think or want to have stuff or things. And this is just sort of tapping into it and tapping and pushing and prodding and going until it can be an addiction, right? It gets to a point where it totally uproots who we are as people.
You have to be a very strong person not to. Well, it's not like not the other commandment, but not the murder.
Correct.
This, you have to be a tremendously strong person to go past a beautiful mansion and say, "Gee, that's a gorgeous home. Maybe I like something like that." You know, or
no question. I think it takes a lot of practice to take any of these types of character traits, envy, jealousy, coveting, desire, urges, all that stuff is a mass effort that's simply not necessarily natural per se, that a person has to work at to overcome, accomplish, get to a place where this stuff doesn't bother. I'll take an example that's not this sheer, but being happy for somebody else, right? And in that moment, to not think, "Oh, I wish I had that," just to be happy that they have it, that's really hard. It's really hard to do. Like that's an effort to hear news from somebody that's good, and be happy for them only. Right?
It's hard.
It's all that character stuff. That's why this is important, because what we're doing here is we're building into the Ten Commandments, right? Character, right? Character building is now part of the. So it's not simply just the active mode, which is how we're seeing it on some level. It's even just the thought mode is work. In the same way that on the other end of the Aseret HaDibrot, you have the idea of faith and belief. That's also thought activity that takes work. I was at a lecture this year where Rabbi Yisachar Frand spoke. I was in New York in the summertime, and he spoke about the word emunah. And he said that word emunah is not just what's the root of that word. He said the root of that word, and the way he explained it was imun. Imun means to practice. He said faith doesn't just happen. You have to practice your faith. Meaning, you just in the same way that you would practice shooting foul shots. If you're a basketball player, you don't just naturally walk up and you hit every shot. You have to work at it. And so it's the same thing, faith. It's an effort and work towards perfecting the faith. Here, it's the same thing, perfecting not being covetous, not being desirous, all these other things. Yeah, and you'll see in Ibn Ezra, where he goes right to it. Skip line number 11, go right to number 12.
Where would a cell phone be today? Every 3 months they come out, it's faster,
the next thing,
it's lighter,
right?
It's this, it's that.
I think that's an extension on the same set of subjects. I don't think that's,
People run out and buy it because they want that, they want it.
Yeah. Well, do they want it just because they want it? They want it because somebody else has it, right? That's all built into the same thing. Look at number 12, source number 12. This is the Ibn Ezra that I mentioned to you before. And this is what he says. Line number 9. Lo tachmod, anashim rabim yitamahu. People will wonder, al zota mitzvah, on this mitzvah. Eich yeh adam, how will be a person, shelo yachmod davar yafa beliba? How is it possible that a person is not going to see a beautiful thing and say, ooh, that's nice, right? Kol mashehu nechmad lamara einav. Anything that a person looks at and is, wow, like mind-blowing in their eyes, whatever that item is, that's where that is. That's where that tava is. Right? So he says, v'ata atin lecha mashal, I'll give you a mashal. Daki ish kafri, sheish lo da'at nechona, v'hu ra'a bat melech, shehi afa. It's an interesting mashal, I admit it at the outset. So he says, you have a guy from a certain town, and he's a right-minded person, and then he sees the daughter of the king, princess. She yafa lo yachmoro tabaliba. He's not going to desire her. Going to line 11. Why? Ki yada kizel lo yitaken. It's not possible. It's an impossibility that that's going to happen. That there's going to be the possibility of that relationship. He's not going to. He's not crazy, right? He doesn't believe he's going to have God grow wings and fly over, and it's going to happen. It's not. A person's not going to desire their mother, right? The Ibn Ezra didn't read Oedipus, right? So, right, there's no interest in his mother. Even if his mother's beautiful, that's not something that people think about. Kihir gilu, why? Kihir gilu minu rav. He is habituated from childhood, ladachi asurla, that his mother is prohibited to him. Kacha kol maskil tzarich sheyada ki isha yafa o mamon, lo yimtzenu adam bavur chachmato v'da'ato. It's not that the person just sort of like, it's not your intellect or your genius that simply allows that to happen. There are a lot of smart people in the world who have nothing, right? Rak, end of line 13, kashir chalak lo hashem. It comes from God. So the Ibn Ezra, in his explanation of this, gets very religious on you. Okay? This is a religious thing. This, if you're not a religious person or someone who holds to any tenets of character in this way, so then think what you think, believe what you believe, desire what you want. But if you're going to be a person of faith, right, someone who's a believer in God, then this is not possible. He says, V'amar Kohelet, right? Person could even not do anything and get a chelek. It's not in worth, it's in luck. Right, there's a podcast that I listen to that at the end of the podcast, he always asks the person, so how much of your success is hard work and how much of it is luck? I've yet to hear a person say that none of it was luck. These are super successful people.
I've never heard anybody say it's God.
Very, right, he's not asking religious people. They have not said God either. But I have heard people in another context say that luck for them is God. I've heard that. I find that fascinating. But that's what he says.
The harder you work, the more luck you have.
So he says, middle of line 15, Hamaskil lo yitaviv lo yachmod, a smart person... A smart person, a right thinking person, is not going to have these issues. The wife of his friend, in theory, because let's say they're on the same level, right, would be more desirous to him than the daughter of the king. The Isser is not Bat HaMelech. The Isser is Eshet Re'ehu, his wife, his friend's wife. Al Kain, who Yismach Bechalko, he has to be happy with what he has. He has to try, make the effort to not be covetous of things that are not his. Ki yada shashem Hashem lo ratza latelo. God doesn't want you to have it. That's it. That's hard. Walk around having to practice that and saying that out loud is the practice of this idea in the Ibn Ezra, which makes it incredibly difficult, which is why it finds itself into the list of 10. It's incredibly difficult to be a person who thinks and operates in this manner because natural people have desires and have thoughts about, I wonder about that, right? And he says, you can't. That's the prohibition. That's what fundamental to this prohibition is. And then the last two sources sort of are in the same similar type of vein. This Sforno, which is built on top of the Ibn Ezra. This is source number 13 in line number 19. Lo tachmod, yeha davar etzlecha linimna gamur. It should be completely impossible for you to be connected to that thing. It's cut off from you entirely. Shekin hanimna, that which is cut off from you completely, lo yachmadu hatevacha, you won't have a desire for it at all. So to give you another halachic example of this, right? So it's a funny thing. If you have a piece of steak, right? So then if they put a piece of cheese down in front of you, you're not going to touch it. Right? I wait 6 hours, I wait 3 hours, whatever I do, I wait. There's not even a desire for that item. It's not even there. Even if it's the best ice cream in the world, I know someone who went on they called it a meat diet, right? They had meat for breakfast, right? So, because suddenly then, for 6 hours, they couldn't eat all the things that they knew were really bad for them, which is all these dairy products, right? So it was a crazy thing, but it's, and I asked them once, why? And they said exactly this. Once it was asur for me, finished. So that's not limited to that, right? So the Sforno is saying it's not limited to that, it's beyond that. And then the Sefer HaChinuch also says it's also in our power to do this. It's not beyond us to do this. If it was beyond us to do this, so we have rules like that in Chazal, right? If things are impossible for us to do, so we don't have any issues there. So he says in source number 14, line 21, V'atita malomar ve'echia biyado shel adam libno levavo mitavot mihatavot el otzer kol kli chemda shiur b'shut chavero. How are you going to tell a person that they have to hold back? You can't have that. You can't have that desire. You can't think that way. It's not possible. Ve'ech tavo, line 22. Ve'ech tavo b'Torah miniyab b'mashiyev shelo la'adom la'morolav. How's a person? How does the Torah have a prohibition on something that a person can't manage? So he says, line 23 in the middle. Ki be'amnam ha'amnam biyad ha'adam limno atzmo. A person has the ability, if they want, to control how they think and to control how they desire or what they desire. Ubirshuto ubedato, in line 24, it's in his within his world and in his mind. Laharchik ulekarev chafzo bechol adrim kirtzino, to distance or to bring close that which a person wants. V'libo masur biyado, his heart is in his hand. Al-kain, al-kol asher yachpots yitno. And all that person wants to put it towards, he can then put it towards. And all that a person wants to remove it from, he can remove it from. And so, all that you have in the Sefer HaChinuch is, yes, it's machshava, it's thought, it's heart, it's desire. But what the Torah is saying is, it's within your power to do this. And so what you have with this prohibition is, no one said it's easy. It's in fact extremely difficult. It would seem to be against nature or the natural tendency of humanity, right, as you see around you, to think this way, believe this way, operate this way, even do it, right, even violate this to the point where they're taking stuff, right, through pressure or coercion, right, that belong to other people. Right? But at the same time, even short of that, just simply the thought process is within the power of a human being to control that urge, that desire, that want, that need, that feeling, whatever, that's within our power to do and to direct it somehow other way. Now, what the process is and how a person does that, and each person is different, and v'chule. Yeah, that's true. For some people, it's food, and for some people, it's money, and for some people, it's possessions, and some people, whatever it is, right? There are methods that exist in the world to help a person figure out how to practice being less covetous of other people's property. So as much as where it starts halacha lemaase in this realm of, according to the Rambam, it has to lead to some sort of action, taking it a deeper level, it doesn't have to have the action. And the other explanations of it from a thinking perspective are, no, the Torah is expecting a much higher level from us as people, and that's a level that we should expect ourselves to be able to reach if we want to reach that, and if we work on it in the proper manner. And so Lo Tachmod as the last one, as opposed to before where you thought it sounded like it should be six, we're putting it last because it's incredibly difficult to be at a point where I'm okay with what I have, right? Put that in here. I'm okay with what they have. I'm happy for them that they have it, and I don't even want it. That's a high level. And so the Torah is expecting and asking of us a very high level. And and that's commandment number 10, Lo Tachmod. Where we go next week, we'll see. But that is our issue for tonight.
You can compare that with eating Shabbat. But Yisham Mishad is the most, the majority, let's say,
yeah.
I mean, I'm throwing, like you say, a lot. But because a lot of people, let's say, that we know or we're associated with, not we, but I mean,
yeah,
a lot of us, are Shom Mishad because they were born into a family that did it.
Yeah.
It's a habit.
Yeah.
Most of it is a habit. You wouldn't think of turning on the light because, well, you just never did it. But those people who are not Shomer Shabbos or are not Shomer Mitzvot, they can't understand. Here, I volunteer someplace with non-religious people.
Okay.
They can't understand how a young couple don't live together before they get married.
Right.
They can't understand that. How could that be?
Right.
And by us, it's...
Yeah, so it's... Habitual, or it's ritualized in some cases also. Right. Right.
And they just don't understand it. That's okay.
Right. And so, but it's possible and it's doable, right? And it's just hard.
Of course.
Yeah, it's just hard. So anyway, that's a little tough one.
It's not so hard.
Shkach.